Now, last night, Brian, I love my podcast, as you know, as you do, as many of our listeners do, and I am right on top of, you know, you love a podcast when you're sweating on the next episode to drop. Episode 6 last night, Tooth Fairy, Liar Liar, the podcast with 60 Minutes reporter Tommy Steinfort. The co-host happens to be our next guest, an investigative reporter at the Sydney Morning Herald, a chief investigative reporter, by the way, Kate McClymont, who's on the line. G'day, Kate.
Hello, Joel and Fletch.
Hello, Kate. How are you?
I tell you what, we're enjoying this podcast, Kate. So much work goes into it. So by my numbers, it was something like 70-odd people Melissa Caddick had defrauded and about $27 million. Is that about right?
Well, yes, it was give or take about that amount of people because some people had two accounts. They lost both their super and their investments. And also $30 million went into her accounts and $23 million of that she spent.
Wow.
Yeah, so Kate, can I ask you this? What made you delve into this particular story? Was it the fact that she's missing or was it the fact that there were so many people that got ripped off and a lot of them were her friends? What was the inspiration for this particular story?
Oh, I hate to say this, but the inspiration was pure chance. As in, you know what often happens in life? You're doing something and it leads you somewhere else. I was investigating a search warrant that had been executed on a businessman's house in Wallara. And when I rang up the federal police and I said, oh, you know, I want to get some info about the investigation into this person. And they said, oh, now, do you mean the warrants in Wallaroy Road or the warrants in Wallangra Road?
Ooh, and hello.
Hello. I said, who's in Wallangra Road? And they said, oh, I don't know, some woman called Melissa Caddick. We executed search warrants. So I thought, I'll have a little bit of a look at Melissa Caddick. Never heard of her. Couldn't find much. You know, did all the preliminary work, you know, what she owned, etc. And then she went missing. So it was just purely by chance. And then it's rarely that you start doing a story where it just has so much intrigue and so many twists and turns. If you were in a writer's room, they'd kick you out and say, that is BS. You can't make that up.
It was, I'm loving it. And speaking about sliding doors, which brought you to the story, Kate, it was sliding doors in your last episode. I don't know how much you want to share because it's a terrific podcast, Liar Liar, but Tooth Fairy is the most recent episode. That's one of the great sliding doors. Most people fell on the sad side of the ledger, but this particular lady got out of it, didn't she?
I know. And how enjoyable is it ever to go and have root canal treatment, like nil? So there she is. She's in having root canal treatment. And it's during the pandemic, the endodontist office is completely empty. She gets chatting to another woman. They talk about how empty the city is, and the other woman says, oh, you know, I'm a financial advisor and I work in the city, but now I'm working from home. And Prue, the other woman, says, oh, my financial advisor has got a great setup in Dover Heights. And the other woman basically says, oh, no, please don't tell me it's Melissa Caddick. So as a result of that meeting, she finds out that the other woman in the dentist, Melissa, has stolen her license and is falsely pretending that, you know, she can conduct business. And not only that, she dobbed her into ASIC and she was under investigation. So straight away, that woman rings Melissa Caddick and says, oh, I found a house. I need all my money back. She'd invested $2.5 million. And when you run a Ponzi scheme, if someone demands their money back, you've also got to give them their fake profit, which was $300,000, because if you don't, word will get out and your scheme will collapse.
So, Kate, that brings me to my next question, which just on the case of Prue, which is an alias, Prue's not the real lady's name, but Prue, who invests $2.5 million, who made, I think you said it was $300,000 in profit, as far as paper
That's
profit
right.
was concerned.
Yep.
So she gets paid out the $2.8 million. Now, as far as the liquidators are concerned, given this is pretend money, is that $300,000 in pretend profits at risk of Prue leaving when they start to go after them, the liquidators?
Look, it possibly could be. But I guess the thing about Prue was that she didn't know that it was a fraud.
Mm.
All she knew was that her money was with somebody who wasn't licensed, and she didn't like the sound of that. So, look, it's arguable as to whether they might go after her. I don't know. But one of the other lucky people was somebody who was going through a bitter divorce.
Yes.
And, you know, he rang Melissa and said, oh, you know, I have to change the trustee of my superannuation. You know, I'm going through a bitter divorce with my wife. The next thing, without even asking, he's expelled. His money and his fake profits are back. And I think that's because, you know, he's a Perth surgeon, and Melissa thinks they're probably the kind of people who would hire a forensic accountant, and I'll be found out. So he was one of the lucky ones as well.
But Melissa, what about what's happened with
Kate?
Sorry, Kate.
That's all right.
I'm calling Melissa. I'm just thinking about Melissa's mum and dad.
Yeah.
Are they still alive? Melissa's mum and dad?
Yes. So that's Barb and Ted Grimley. And this is a really sad part of the story because they're in their 80s.
Hmm.
And they were convinced by Melissa to sell their family home, move to Edgecliff, which was so much closer to where Melissa was. Melissa would buy an apartment. So, mum and dad, please give me the sale, you know, the proceeds of the sale of our family home, and you can pay down the mortgage and you can live there rent-free. They give her their $1.1 million, and guess what? She spends it on a diamond ring, private jets, lifestyle expenses. So now her parents in their 80s are they've launched legal action saying, look, we need to be treated differently. But of course, it's their relatives, their cousins, their friends, and they're saying, no, you don't. We gave your daughter money thinking we were investing in shares. So there's a big split in the family over whether they should get preference or not.
I'm sure there would be. But what about the husband, Anthony, who I found when he seems a bit strange, I find, when he was reading a prepared statement when Melissa went missing early doors and he was reading off his phone. I don't know what was going, because obviously he was...
Shocked, if it's to be, yeah.
It just seemed, he seemed quite cold. Were you able to interview him at all? Or did you attempt
to? I've tried. In fact, I approached him at court one day and I introduced myself and I said, I'd love to talk to you. And he didn't even look up from his phone. He just kept looking down. And he said, why would I want to do that?
Okay,
fair enough. But I think the interesting thing about him is that, okay, so the federal police and ASIC raid his family home with Melissa there. This is on the 11th of November 2020. It's the worst day of your life. They've not only, you know, issued you search warrants, they've carted out your clothes, your designer handbags, your shoes, your jewellery. And she would have known that day that the gig's up. Like, I'm done for. They've got me.
Yeah.
So the next morning, and the last of the raiding party leaves at about 6:30. So the next morning at 5:30 a.m., the police are later told that the front door opens and shuts and they think Melissa's gone for a run. Now, Anthony, the husband, sends her a text message at just after, you know, about 7:15. Oh, hi, Melissa. You know, you okay? Gets no answer. Then finds her phone, her wallet, and her car keys are all where she leaves them. So what does he do? Nothing. He waits another 30 hours to go to the police and say, my wife is missing. And I think this is where there's been a lot of frustration for the police, because if they'd been able to start that search a day and a half earlier, you know, things might have been a lot different. Now, there is no indication that Anthony Colletti was involved in the fraud, knew anything about the fraud. It's just that his behaviour is odd.
Mm.
And some members of the family have said, look, the reason he didn't do anything was that she was so controlling in the relationship. He was afraid to do anything. He was afraid to make a mistake and make Melissa angry. So he did nothing. Now, look, I don't know, you know, but I think that's, you know, quite possible. But it's just, you would think if your wife disappeared and you just had the worst day of your life, you might be worried. And he didn't ring a single relative, not a parent, not a brother, not a friend. He didn't even ring them to say, oh, by the way, you wouldn't have seen Melissa by any chance, would you?
Yeah, well, what about the neighbours? Because I live in North Bondi, and that was during COVID times, and I'd walk up and do a bit of a sticky beak. And every house up there has, Kate, has CCTV footage. Every house. I counted four either side of their place, four across the road. And then when I listened to your podcast and they were saying the police had no vision of her leaving the house, I find that hard to believe that no one in that street had CCTV footage of her leaving at 5:30 a.m.
I know. I think police found that really bizarre. And, of course, ASIC took away, and the federal police took away, the hard drive of Melissa Caddick's own CCTV. And if that had been left there, at least they would have had an idea of what time did she leave? Did she get in a car? Did she turn left? Did she turn right? But they have no idea. She literally vanished into thin air.
Hey, Kate, and we are speaking to Kate McClymont, Chief Investigative Reporter at the Sydney Morning Herald. Kate, is your gut feeling that we'll learn more about this case, or your gut feeling says, no, we've probably heard everything now?
Look, I think we will learn more in September when there is a coronial inquest into her suspected death. So then we'll at least learn, okay, what was the findings from the forensic pathologist? Because, of course, her partial remains washed up in February last year, 400 kilometres away on a remote south coast beach. So will they be able to tell whether that was by the foot deteriorating and becoming detached? Will they be able to tell whether it was, cut through? So I think, and also they'll be able to do hopefully scientific experiments as to how long that shoe might have been in the water. So I think that's the next, basic indication of will we get closure then?
I find, so there was differing reports, Kate, about the shoe. They were saying there was bone fragments in the shoe. Was it actually the whole foot cut from the ankle?
I don't know.
No,
I don't know. I've only ever seen the pixelated photos. So I just don't know how much. And it's funny because Tom Steinfort, my podcast co-host, he and I can't even agree from the photos on whether it's the left foot or the right foot.
Wow.
We study that shoe. And I said, no, look, see how it's curved that way? And he said, no, see how it's... So we don't even know which foot it is and how much human remains were in it.
And was she, Kat, was she always a bit shifty, even like in your research? Was she always a bit shifty in her previous jobs?
Well, exactly. So in one of her first jobs after leaving school, she was caught forging her boss's signature on checks.
Oh, wow.
And she got fired. I know, she got fired. But he never reported her to police. And you think all those victims, I mean, if she'd had a criminal record then, none of this would have happened. So the next job, she appears to be rather nifty with the correction fluid, with the Tippex, because she alters her commission to give herself double the agreed amount. So, I just think she's just been bad from the get-go.
Right. Kate, I was shafted by West Tigers' major sponsor, Radisson Mayne, who you may be familiar with.
Do you want
Kate
to investigate this?
Kate, I can tell you this. I did my own investigating via YouTube. This bloke, Robert Basile...
Via YouTube?
Yes. Well, this bloke, Robert Basile, had gone to the Ukraine and was selling the same story. So when he got caught with us, he was extradited. So ASIC got a bit cagey because they said no one's ever been a major sponsor of two rugby league teams at the same time. And they said, who's this Radisson Mayne? They looked into him. Both the two chief operators, so to speak, fled the country, got caught at Heathrow Airport, extradited back. So again, though, the reason I bring that up, it's this sociopathic mentality, this charming, charismatic, basically full of bull dust. But they get people, and they got us being quite young, and they give you a bit. So if we're going to buy ourselves a Subway, and they said, oh, let our legal people look at it. And they come back and they said, guys, that's a really good idea what you found. So they lure you in with that.
Yeah.
And then they go, we could do better, though. And you think, okay, you get greedy, you're young.
Right.
But anyway,
yeah.
Enough about that. How many more episodes to go, Kate? Because I really get disappointed when a podcast that I love finishes.
Oh, I think I'll be pleased.
Yeah.
We've got 10.
Yep.
And then we'll have a little break and we'll come back when we've got more to report from the coronial inquest.
Right.
Just on the beach, Brian, Born to Beach, that's where the foot was found.
And that's where, in your podcast, Kate, Melissa went there on holidays, which I find that.
As it was basically school camp.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, as a teenager, they went to that beach. So, I mean, what are the chances?
Yeah, that
beach is really remote.
That smells. Looking from the outside in. What about this, Kate? The 10, just say they get $10 million for her house. They sell her house and there's $10
million. Yeah.
And the bank, then they owed, I think she owed four on it or something
four.
Like that.
So yep,
there's only six.
The bank takes the four. Does the six then go back to, like, divvied up between the victims?
Yes, that's right. So they've already sold the luxury cars, and I think they almost got $400,000 for those. The houses, the complication in this is that Anthony Coletti, the husband, has put in a claim saying, hey, I need a cut of the cars, of the houses. I want my wife's wedding dress back. I want jewels. I want this. I want that, which is a bit odd because she did not earn one legitimate dollar. Everything she got was stolen from her clients. So he's put in a claim saying, well, whatever she stole, I want some of it. So that's got to be decided by the courts. And then you've got the other case. So there's two properties. There's the Dover Heights one. That looks like it will be easier because Anthony Coletti has got to move out by tomorrow. So that will then be vacant and will be ready for marketing and for sale. And then you've got the other legal case with her parents and the Edgecliffe property. But yeah, say they got $12 million, they probably won't get that. But say that they did, and you get rid of you pay off the four, then whatever is left will be divvied up between the investors.
And it's a notorious house to buy too, isn't it now? So that makes it hard to sale. Kate, are we, like, do the bank necessarily take precedence over, or do we know whether the banks are in front of to those who have been ripped off in the pecking order, and should they be? Because weren't some of the loans, like, fraudulent documents? Is any part of that on the banks?
She didn't have any money. So she's given them false records.
Yes.
To say, oh, look, I'm giving you $2 million of stolen funds from other people, and I can service this loan because here's my business. And she has done fake invoices, fake tax returns. So they've relied on false documents to give her the money in the first place. And of course, Anthony Coletti's been living there rent-free for the last, year and a bit. And meanwhile, that the mortgage repayments are enormous. Like, they're about, $19,000 a month just on Dover Heights. So they're going to have default interest to pay, on those mortgages. So that'll have to come out as well. And the longer they fight in court, the more money is going on legal fees that should be going to investors.
Kate, that is fascinating insight, and we've taken up a heap of your time because we've thoroughly enjoyed it, as have the listeners. The board has lit up. But the podcast is Liar Liar. We've tweeted out on our social medias about Liar Liar. Yourself and Tom Steinfort doing a wonderful job. We really appreciate you giving this insight. I know it's hard work for you, but I'm enjoying it for what it's worth. Monday, when that new episode drops, I'm straight onto that. Kate McClymont, we really appreciate your time here on The Run Home with Joel and Fletch.
It has been so lovely talking to you both.
Good on you, Kate. Thank you.
Well, we'll get you back on, Kate. Of course, a Walkley winner around the Bulldog salary cap scandal from the early 2000s. So when the anniversary comes with that, Kate, we'd love you to get back on and talk about specifically that and how you won the Walkley. But we appreciate your time, Kate. All the best with the podcast.
See you, Joel and Fletch. Bye.
There's Kate McClymont, Chief Investigative Reporter at the Sydney Morning Herald.